Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Because we're going to rock and roll with our good friend, Joan Pryde, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan is with us even as we speak. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. Thanks a lot.
It's good to have you back. How's it going?
Thank you. Great. It's great. Good to be there.
You got a cherry blossom report for us?
Well, I haven't heard much about the cherry blossoms. It's kind of weird. You know, Washington, D.C. has been about 70 degrees yesterday and today. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow we're going to have snow. And I'm not kidding.
Tomorrow you're going to have snow?
It's not going to stick, but they're predicting snow in the afternoon and then 40s over the weekend.
It's this global warming stuff. I'm telling you, darn George Bush, he's at it again.
Yep. It is true. It's all this volatility in the weather.
That is, I've been having so much fun with my global warming folk friends. I don't know if they call me a friend, but I still call them friends. Who were telling them that there were three global warming events in discussions and debates, committee meetings, whatever, that had to be canceled in February because it was too cold.
Well, what worries me is
you got to love the irony.
One day it's 70 and one day it's 40.
I know it.
I mean, you can laugh about it, but it's a little bit scary.
That's just the funniest thing. Hey Joan, one of the things I want to talk about before we get into the letter is a little bit about some current events in terms of the stock market.
And okay.
The only reason I'm going to get very quick to off of Wall Street into Main Street, because I promised the stock market guys that I wouldn't do stocks if they wouldn't do small business. But it is important. It is important, I think, to point out that a lot of people are wringing their hands right now over what are called the subprime lender meltdown. And this is a sub-industry, subcategory of the financial industry that has sprung up over the last, what do you say, Joan, 5-8 years, something like that?
I would say so, right.
And these are people who have created, let's say, creative ways to leverage more real estate mortgages, to get more real estate mortgages by loaning money
to people who might not otherwise qualify.
Subprime.
Them.
Yeah, that's the politically correct way to say it. People who typically wouldn't qualify, right?
Right.
But also some creative ways, Joan, not just subprime, but there have been mortgages out there that have been loaned for more than the value of the home. Not 80%, but maybe 110%.
Right, exactly.
So we had to know, Joan, when you looked at that over the years, we had to know that we've had a couple of hundred years of banking experience that has given rise to good, solid bank practices, which is typically you need to have some down payment, the companies need to make sure that they do credit checks, et cetera, all those best practices were kind of thrown out the window.
Well, and there's a reason that there's an 80% loan-to-value ratio as well that you're supposed to adhere to.
So the first little hiccup, these companies are taking a beating now, and one of them either was or it was about to be delisted. And to get to the point a little quicker, I guess, is that this has caused a ripple through the global stock markets to a degree. A lot of people have wrung their hands and said the Fed should cut rates and that is the economy going to be able to bear up against this? Folks, here's the thing I want to say, folks. Joan, this is one sector of a huge financial industry, right?
Right.
Now, it's going to ripple through some areas, but this is Wall Street, folks. This is not Main Street. The Main Street economy that small business owners live in is solid and sound.
Well, and it's interesting you should say that, because there was an interesting article, I believe it was in today's Washington Post, with a great little map showing where the worst problems are in the United States. And you would expect from the media reports we've been seeing to have the whole map showing the entire United States with problems. But the problems, the biggest problems with foreclosures are clustered in just a handful of states, mainly in what I would call the Rust Belt.
Right. Well, and I heard someone say the other day that if, and I've forgotten exactly how they termed it, but they were saying something like if 100% of the mortgages that were delinquent 90
right.
days,
mm-hmm.
if 100% of them defaulted, actually went into foreclosure, which they're not.
Which couldn't happen, right.
Which they're not.
Never
100%
happen, right.
went in, which they're not. That even of the ones that are in default are 90 days, that's like less than 1% of all mortgages.
Right.
So the reason I wanted to dwell on this for just a minute, Joan, is because it's possible for people to encourage, you know, unwittingly maybe, all of us to talk ourselves into a recession.
Well, it's all psychology.
It's exactly right. And, you know, Joan, as you know, the stock market is an emotional animal.
You think?
They don't even know. I think, you know, they don't even understand themselves, the folks who work in that industry, really. They act like they do. But the truth is, it's an emotional beast. It's
sure.
It's an erratic beast. It's a hysterical beast sometimes. The Main Street economy is not like that.
Right.
Main Street is not emotional. It's very methodical. It's very.
Well, they have to take a longer view. They
That's
can't
exactly
react
right.
to every little thing that happens.
So let's not get too excited.
Yeah.
Let's
right.
not get overexcited about this thing.
Right.
And just look around, Joan. I think what I like to tell people is look around. What's happening? Are you still selling? Are you still hiring? Are people? Do we have 4.5% unemployment and 2% inflation? I mean, Joan,
right.
how good is that?
I know. Are there mass layoffs? Do you
right.
still have pricing power? Sure.
The fundamentals are in place. Don't let one silly and Joan, don't forget, a lot of people predicted that this was going to happen when they started doing these kinds of loans.
That's right. That's right.
So anyway, all right. I got that off my chest, Joan.
Back off your soapbox.
I'm happy. Now, anything else
okay.
you'd like to add to that?
I think you've just about said it all, Jim. Thank you.
Well, thank you for helping me with it.
Thanks for being on our show.
Let's talk about states and taxes. What's the news there, Joan? That's what Kiplinger led with this week.
Well, I think the first line says it all. Get ready to pay more in state taxes. But we're really talking about mainly sales taxes, not income taxes.
When we come back after these messages, we're going to talk about that. And folks, it's probably going to irritate you when you realize some of the things that states can do with sales tax. Right after these messages, it's 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Mr. Joe Cocker, ladies and gentlemen, one of the serious rockers, still rocking too. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour and visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, who's also a big Joe Cocker fan, right, Joan?
Oh, yeah. Can't you tell all the noises I'm making
oh,
here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, Joan, we're talking, folks, of course, she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the Kiplinger, we're working off of the Kiplinger letter this week, and talking about the states that seem to not be, well, Joan, I'm thinking of a word right now for states.
Okay.
I'm thinking of a word, and the word
Keep it clean,
is,
Jim.
The word is greedy. Because you and I both know the states are awash in cash right now, aren't they?
Boy, they sure are.
They got lots of revenue from the strong economy, just like the federal government, Joan, is awash in cash right now because
right.
of all the money, all the extra revenue they have. Folks, supply side economics works. Dynamic scoring works, and we're seeing it in front of our very eyes right now. The states are awash in cash, Joan, but they're so greedy, they still want to raise taxes. Tell us what they're going to be doing.
Well, It's interesting that they're not going to be raising income taxes, but what they're trying to do, I guess, is prepare themselves for rainy day. Now, you could argue, I guess, that they could also prepare themselves for rainy day by cutting spending, but it looks like what they're trying to do really is find services mainly that they can either tax for the first time or raise taxes on.
Joan,
they want to go for the service industries.
Do you know when the rainy day is for a politician?
Every day
that they need to spend money in order to get a vote or whatever, that's a rainy day. It doesn't have anything to do with precipitation, Joan. And
right.
And you know, the other thing that I'd like to point out, Joan, and I'm not saying this is the case in every state, but I know in many states, legislatures can raise sales tax without any kind of approval by the electorate.
Yeah, I was kind of amazed by that. That's an interesting little fact. Scary little fact.
Well, and let me tell you what else can happen. A local community can choose to raise taxes and get that through the legislature without anybody in the local community being.
Ooh.
I mean, they can just raise sales tax if they want to.
Yeah, that's not good either.
No, and now they can't raise gasoline taxes, I think, maybe without a vote.
Okay.
But sales tax, now this is some states. I'm not sure about all states.
Yeah.
But my point is, that's when I saw your report that they were working on sales tax instead of income tax. That's when I said, well, that's because they don't have to get approval.
Right.
But you're saying that they're starting to tax not just food and clothing and stuff like that, consumer items, but now they're wanting to focus more on services, right?
That's right. And
have not been taxed by sales tax.
We've got a whole list of services here. It's kind of from soup to nuts, and we kind of categorize them. Part of it is what we call business assistance, like advertising, printing, and accounting. But there's also a whole area in terms of, I guess, what I would call development, which is construction, plumbing, landscaping, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty broad, and I'm not saying every state is going to do everything, but that's kind of the overview.
Right. Well, and yeah, you got. I mean, even on more increasing taxes on utilities.
That's right.
You're also saying that, and Joan, there a lot of states have lease taxes, so that they have taxes on, for example, if you rented a copier.
Right.
Some taxes have tax. Some states have taxes on that.
But that's very creative.
Oh yeah, but that's been going on for a long time. But typically, if you hire a company to come out and build a room onto your house,
okay,
they'll charge you tax on the material, but not on the labor.
Oh, okay.
And so now you're saying that they're going to try to start taxing the labor.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and you're right. That's creative. And, of course, we know when it comes to getting new taxes, politicians are – it's like this innate skill. It's innate – they're like savants that way, aren't they, Joe?
Well, I think if they try to just raise income taxes for the states that have income taxes, there'd be a big hue and cry. But if it's a sales tax on a service, it's kind of buried in a way.
Right.
And you just blame the service provider for what you think is an increase in price when, in fact, it's really having him or her having to tack on a new tax.
Oh, exactly. In fact, it's extra work for them. It costs.
Sure.
And see, this is another thing that a lot of people don't realize.
They have to remit the tax.
This is an extra burden on small businesses.
That's right. That's right.
And they have to collect more taxes. A lot of people don't realize what a disproportionate burden sales tax collection is on a small business. Joan, did you know that most states that charge sales tax have above certain amounts, like Walmart and companies like that, bigger companies, the state actually allows them to keep a portion of that money?
Ooh, why?
For the administration.
Oh,
but they
have to be a big company to get
that's
that.
That's right.
That's not fair.
Well, it's exactly right. But small businesses, they collect under certain amounts, don't get any kind of compensation for collecting taxes.
Seems a little counterintuitive because I would think the big companies are better at, not better, but have more, I guess, infrastructure to be able to
exactly
do it.
That's exactly right. Yet another example of how small businesses are discriminated and another reason why I get my hackles up about that all the time. Stand by. Joan, quick break. We're going to be right back. We got a lot more stuff to talk about with our good friend Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's Chicago to take us out.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble, which is what Joan Pride calls me all the time. We're back, and I'm at your service.
Sure.
Joan is the lovely and talented and always acerbic Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, don't forget to check out my website when you get a chance, smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you use it to your advantage, and you are. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, because I'm not. You guys are wearing out my website. We thank you for that. Joan, we're having a record month.
Wow!
With 10 years with a 10-year-old website, that's kind of hard to do.
That's
and
great.
And we're having and the blog, we've got like a 15-to-20-to-1 ratio of page views to visitors on the blog. It's unbelievable.
Neat.
How people are using that. So, folks, that's on the homepage at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Plus all the other things, lots of current events, current things up there, and the blog especially brings things up front. And don't forget, we have a newsletter that we send to you every Sunday afternoon by email. Check it out when you get a chance. Joan, the economy. You guys say don't fret over February unemployment numbers. Or I should say employment numbers, right?
Employment numbers.
I should say that.
Because the job gains weren't that high. We called it meager. And in fact, the most meager for, a couple of years.
Well, Joan, let's you know, this is like...
Well, this we can't is, be Pollyanna all the time,
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is like when the economy went from 4.5% growth to 3% growth, which is like going from 200 miles an hour to 70 miles an hour, a much safer but very fast 70 miles an hour from 4.5% to 3%. You know, people wrung their hands, oh, my God, the economy is slowing. Well, you know what, folks? It needed to slow. And so now, Joan, here we stand, 4.5% unemployment. Many economists consider that to be full employment.
Yes, that's
true. Meaning that if you've got a college education, Joan, unemployment is like less than 2% for those folks.
Wow,
the thing is that how even if you want job, even if you wanted to hire somebody, Joan, you may not be able to find the person you want. In fact, there's something like 2 million jobs going wanting right now in America.
Gee.
Because we can't find people for those jobs. So if you think about it, Joan, at some point in time, you know, you're going to have a drop-off in hiring. Right? Because you say here, you're not talking about unemployment, you're talking about employment.
Employment, the job growth.
At some point in time,
we're
getting to a point, Joan, we're getting to a tipping point where people are not being able to find the people they want. And so if automatically somehow we could replicate 2 million people today, conceivably, it's possible that 2 million people could find a job in America today, what would that do to the economy? But we don't have those people.
Gosh.
We don't have the people. It's not just bodies, Joan. It's keep people capable of doing the jobs that are needed. We still got Joan. We're out of sync with the skill level of workers to a degree. Not as much as we were 3 years ago. We're still out of sync with the skill level of workers and the 21st century assignments that we have.
That's right. Yes.
So that's a big deal right now. So folks, don't get too excited about the employment numbers. Joan, let's move on down and talk about some business costs. One of the things you guys report this week is that at Kiplinger is that airfares are going up 5%. Joan, I think you're off by maybe like 10% on that.
Uh-oh. So you say 15?
I don't know, but we're seeing costs go up quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, even though there are some low-cost carriers out there, I think by and large, it really seems like fares are going up across the board.
Well, I think they are, and I'm not exactly sure. I guess maybe, I don't know, you know, the fuel prices have stabilized.
Right.
So it's not like they've got that volatility anymore. Some of the companies are coming out of bankruptcy. I guess, has Delta come out of bankruptcy? I've forgotten.
That I don't know.
And but there's some maybe some new competition out there. But it's interesting to see. Well, you know, 5%. I don't know where that all that stands. I do know that it's still that it, to me, Joan, some of the trips that we make,
right,
have doubled in the last 3 years.
Doubled.
The fares have doubled in the last 3 years. Now maybe they were too low to start with. Because I remember some, you know, some ridiculous fares.
Right.
But I thought they were. I thought, wow, what a deal, you know. But now we're not saying that. We're not saying what a deal now.
Gee.
Joan, stand by. Quick break. Folks, when we come back, one of the things I want to talk about, Joan and I want to talk about, is some of the legal issues, some of the legal increases in costs that you and I are experiencing, especially with regard to regulation. Then we're going to talk a little bit about China. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the vice president situation is interesting this week. We'll talk about that. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Back, it's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with Kiplinger Editors. And this is the time when I like to tell you, I always like every week to tell you about their website, kiplinger.com. And because it's a good one, I use it, and I encourage you to do that. Lots of good stuff there you can use just by wandering over there. Just no barrier to entry to the main part of their site. But if you want some of the really good stuff, they want you to subscribe to that, and they should, because they put a lot of work and a lot of investment into this, and that also gives you access to their publications, right, Joan?
You bet.
Like the letter we work off of that's been around since 1923. That's the weekly publication. Then they got three biweeklies: the California, the Tax, and the Agriculture Letter. Those three, and then there's a magazine that they publish once a month, Joan.
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And they still got the Blassingame 30-day free trial.
I think so.
Ask them for that when you call this number. Joan?
Yes. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Work with me, Joan. We're going into the bonus round here. So.
I thought you were about to say the number. Okay, well,
we can
say it if
I don't know the number, Joan. How can I say the number? Okay. Folks, another thing that you've been hearing a lot of controversy about lately, and you should be, and I want you to pay attention to it, and I want you to encourage the troublemakers who are making trouble about this, encourage them to make more trouble, and that's all of the regulations which businesses have to focus on, have to deal with, and all the legal costs that can arise, not just the compliance costs, but the legal costs that can arise with having to deal with various aspects of these regulations. And Joan, one of the granddaddy of them all for publicly traded companies is Sarbanes-Oxley, isn't it?
You bet. And there's been a lot of talk about Sarbanes-Oxley, particularly recently, about trying to roll back what business feels are some of the more onerous provisions of the law.
Like the Section 404. Is the big
one. The so-called internal controls, which requires a lot of, I guess, monitoring and record keeping, which in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's just that the way they've set it up for businesses to do it is very, very costly.
Well, Joan, the stupid part about the Sarbanes-Oxley bill is that this was a 90-day reaction, a bill that was passed in 90 days as a reaction to all the corporate malfeasance that we had, like a dozen companies out of 15,000, a dozen companies probably were caught and convicted, the principals were, of corporate malfeasance. That's 8/10,000ths of 1% of the companies did,
Jeez.
Joan. And every one of them broke laws that were currently on the books, and every one of them are in jail right now because of those laws, not the Sarbanes-Oxley laws. But yet we've been saddled with this new regulation, which, Joan, as you know, is threatening to make the United States capital markets not as competitive.
Right.
And small business owners, this is rolling down the hill to you in at least two ways, Joan. Number one, it's causing a lot of small businesses get audited financial statements. They have to because of the financing that they do with banks.
That's right.
It's costing them more to get those audits because the price of audits went up significantly.
Yep, and we've been saying it would happen. We warned it would happen, but Congress didn't seem to mind.
Well, exactly, and that's one area. And the other thing, Joan, is there are small businesses sitting on ready right now. They would love to go public.
Yes.
But they're doing is they're standing in the door ready to go public, and they're seeing companies who went public before them coming back out the door.
That's right.
And they're saying, run away. It costs too much.
And companies considered listing on the United States have listed on foreign stock exchanges.
And folks, when you hear me say our Congress is dangerous, that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
These are the things I'm talking about. Joan, there's a let's move over and talk about on page 3.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something that's really been pulling at a lot of heartstrings and been causing a lot of ire in really not in just in Washington D.C. but around the country, and that is the Walter Reed Hospital situation.
That's right.
Tell us what's going on there.
Well, first this started with complaints about the housing for veterans that are wounded and must come to Walter Reed and stay there for quite a while for therapy and treatment. And then it mushroomed into concerns about VA hospitals around the country after someone gets terrific treatment at Walter Reed being sent out to the hinterlands to a VA hospital that maybe is not providing the same level of care. And now, from what I've read just in the last few days in the Washington Post, there's concerns about treatment at Walter Reed itself. So this thing is kind of snowballed.
Well, Joan, here's the thing I want to point out to folks.
Right.
No politician in Washington, D.C., has any right, on Republican or Democrat, mm-hmm. has any right to act surprised.
That's right.
This has been going on for decades. Not even for this, not for the Bush administration, not even just for the Bush and the Clinton administration, but for decades.
Yes.
Veterans have been given the short shrift since there's been a Veterans Administration, basically.
Yes.
And there are some horrible things that have been reported about some of the hospitals, about some of the way these young men and women have been treated, and I think it's an abomination. This nation should be ashamed of itself for this kind of treatment for those people and for those heroes, those wonderful human beings that put their lives and their body parts on the line for us. We should be taking care. We should be carrying them around on pillows.
That's right.
We should be feeding them whatever they want, carrying them around on pillows, and we're not. And we ought to. There should be a corporate, a national shame about this, Joan. And maybe if we do that, maybe we'll get this fixed.
Sure. I hope this is now bringing this to light. I hope something does get fixed.
And it just breaks my heart. It makes me sick to think it's taken this long for it to come to light.
Right.
When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about helping a Marine get a job. We got some important stuff, and as you know, folks, that's near and dear to my heart, and a little bit on the Vice President right after these messages. Stay with us.
And the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Joan, I'm so happy and thankful to you at Kiplinger.
Well, thank you.
For this next piece. Would you tell us what it is, please?
Well, we asked the question, do you have a job for a Marine? And what we're talking about is a program that's being run by the Defense Department, and I think it's a great name. I think you like this name. It's called Hiring Heroes.
Right.
If you have a job that a wounded soldier could do, the Pentagon wants to know about it.
Yeah. Well, folks, and as many of you know, and I said something about this, Joan, for just a couple of minutes earlier in the week. I haven't talked a lot about it over the last several months. But my Marine, my son Craig, is back in the United States at the end of his second tour in the Al Anbar province in the last.
Boy, are we thankful for that.
In the last 3 years, we are thankful for that. He's home. He's safe. He has all of his body parts, and we're thankful for that. And Joan, our thoughts and our prayers, our hearts, our admiration, our love, and everything else that we can possibly generate with our humanity goes out to all those men and women who've served, especially those who have paid such a price.
Right. Right. No, absolutely.
And I will tell you, folks, I know these kids. And whether they've been wounded or not, you're going to be getting some of the finest human beings, people with a purpose. Joan, I mean, imagine hiring somebody who knows what it's like to have purpose in their life.
Well, and brave, loyal, hardworking. I mean, what more could you ask for?
People who know how to stand for something.
Right, right.
Find them, folks. Find these young men and women and hire them. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Joan, I don't see a website.
Yes, there is.
Oh, there it is. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. www.military.com/support.
Please check that out, folks, and give them a shot. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. Joan, world travelers are having trouble obtaining life insurance. Now, why is that?
Well, as you can imagine,
of terrorism?
things are getting tough out there.
Yeah.
We're saying that road warriors may not be able to get supplemental insurance if they go to places on the State Department's warning list, which covers 31 countries, including Saudi Arabia, Colombia, and Israel, which may be countries where you have to travel fairly often for
this. And you might want to check your insurance policy if it's been bought in the last few years, especially, Joan, because it actually may say it may have something like that. That if you travel
right.
to countries where the government tells you not to, this policy is not in force.
Sure, particularly anything issued after September 11th, you've got to check.
I'm not saying that it does. I'm just saying check
no.
it. Don't be naive about that.
That's right.
Joan,
that's right.
There's an interesting thing you guys on page 4 this week. You say you ask, could Vice President Cheney be a lame duck? Now, Joan, a vice president who is a lame duck. I mean, how could a vice president be a lame duck?
Well, we're saying that the verdict against his aide, Scooter Libby, makes him a lame duck. But he was a lame duck the day after the elections, really.
What vice president has never been a lame duck? Has never been anything but a lame duck? I mean, it just seems odd to me to apply that term to a vice president. Because, see, I come back to, as you know...
Well, he might have a little political power if he were thought to be running for president.
You mean... Well, but lame duck is, to me, is... I mean, the word term we use is, you know, there's a president still listen to him. But
yeah,
Joan,
right.
I keep coming back to what Cactus Jack Garner, the 32nd vice president of the United States, who served two terms... A lot of people don't realize this. Two terms as President Franklin Roosevelt's vice president.
Right.
From, in his first two terms, and refused to run with him in the third term, and told the president he shouldn't run in a third term. In fact, told him he wouldn't even vote for him for the third term.
Wow.
But here's what Cactus Jack Garner, a colorful guy he was out of Texas, he said that, taking the vice president job was the worst damn fool mistake I ever made. And he said that the vice presidency wasn't worth a bucket of warm spit.
But he stayed for 8 years.
Yeah, he stayed for 8 years.
The paycheck must have been good.
What a character. Oh, by the way, Joan, one other quick piece here.
Yes.
On his 95th birthday, he received a congratulatory phone call from President Kennedy.
Wow.
Who was in Texas that day.
Oh, no.
November 22nd, 1963.
Oh, no. That's an amazing historical detail.
How about that? And that was maybe one of the last, who knows, maybe the last call that Kennedy made.
But you don't get this kind of stuff anywhere
else. You don't get this on Fox or CNN or MSNBC, only on the Small Business Advocate Show.
That's
hey,
right.
Joan, thank you for being here today. Good
thank
job.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Got to go for this hour. And by the way, being the Small Business Advocate is worth much more than the vice presidency, as far as I'm concerned. But maybe not as much money. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.